Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel on the entire internet. First on the docket today, for Lori Loughlin, the struggle is real. Second, a story of an 11-year-old firebug. Third, Purdue Pharma pleads guilty for their role in the opioid crisis. Fourth, first female execution since 1953 in the federal system is back on. Fifth, more unexplainable random acts of violence. Six, Ricky Schroeder helps with bond, gets death threats. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk. My name is Scott Reich. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to watch Crime Talk. First, if you haven't done so already, I'd ask that you hit that subscribe button, hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And as always, leave us a comment below. We do read the comments. Now, today is Tuesday. What does that mean? That's right. We're going live tonight, 6 p.m. Mountain Time, on both YouTube as well as Facebook. Please join us. Immediately after that, our Patreon members will receive the secret link, and then they can join us where we'll have an opportunity to be able to talk because we'll give them the secret call-in number as well. So if you haven't joined already, please plan on becoming a Patreon member so that you can participate in our little Patreon family. All right. First on the docket, Lori Loughlin. That's right, the struggle is real. Apparently, the disgraced Fuller House star is living on a diet of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and is really anxious about getting COVID-19. Now, Miss Loughlin, hey, been there, done that, did the whole COVID thing. It sucks, but you can get through it. Now, Miss Loughlin, who's 56, is at the Federal Correctional Institution, Dublin. She's there for 2 months that started on October 30th after being convicted of mail fraud for her paying crooked consultant William Singer $500,000 to get her daughters into UCLA. Apparently, Miss Loughlin is out of her quarantine pod, but she's then now placed into general population. However, the entire facility is still basically locked down, so she's basically still in quarantine in her cell. Now, according to Federal Bureau of Prison Statistics, 326 tests have been given to date with 16 positive cases and 12 are still pending. Now, I can tell you, I'm familiar with this particular facility because it's a female facility and I actually have a client there right now that we are working on some issues to try to get them released early because of the threat of COVID. It's a thing and the courts are actually taking a look at it quite closely. Don't think Ms. Loughlin's going to receive any early outs because of COVID on her particular case. But the reality of it is prisons, although they tried to keep them clean, there is no greater way for germs and disease to spread than to the people in a prison facility. And hopefully, my client, unlike Ms. Loughlin, who did ask for early release due to the pandemic, was denied because the judge said that she has no health problems. My client has significant health issues, so hopefully we'll get some relief on that rather quickly. And apparently Ms. Loughlin is not impressed with the uniform that she gets to wear, as it's really a men's uniform, and she gets to wear the standard Bureau of Prison black boots. That is a far cry from the Gucci shoes she was wearing prior to her prison boots. And this facility is rather dirty. It's also rather old, although there's some grass and things like that. It's an old building, old furniture, metal furniture, nothing aesthetically remotely modern whatsoever. And there's 868 inmates in that main building, as well as the satellite camp, which is a low security federal prison that accepts women. So it may only be a 2 month sentence, but it is slow time. Time stops when people go to prison, as my clients have told me, and it drags on and on and on. Now, Massimo Giannulli, Lori Loughlin's husband, is also in jail, but he's at a low-security men's lockup, which is near Santa Barbara, where he's serving a 5-month sentence for his role in the college admission scandal. We've said this before, this is a rather light sentence for both Laughlin and her husband, given the amount of money that was involved. She got a deal. She needs to just suck up her time, go do it. She's probably going to be released right about Christmas, and she can get this behind her. There's no such thing as easy money. Every time I ever thought I was going to make really quick money on a case, it turned out to be the biggest pain in the ass. There's no such thing as getting your children into a good college easy just like that by paying somebody. It doesn't happen. And I assure you, looking back, hindsight 2020, they would not think that this was worth it. They are now convicted felons. They will be forever branded as such. They will have their time taken away from their family so they could go do a prison sentence on something as silly as trying to get somebody into college. There's no such thing as the easy way through. You got to just work at it and do it right the first time. Next on the docket, a story of an 11-year-old firebug. That's right, an 11-year-old boy has been arrested after allegedly intentionally setting multiple fires at a home in his neighborhood where people were still inside. The incident occurred about 4:10 p.m. in Chattanooga, Tennessee, when the Chattanooga Fire Department received a call regarding several fires outside a home with a possible vehicle and a dumpster fire. When the authorities arrived, they discovered a car was on fire in the rear driveway of the home, another fire located in a trash can that was up against the residence, and a cooler on the porch that was also ablaze, according to the police department. Several witnesses provided statements about what they saw to investigators, who arrested and charged the child with aggravated arson and setting fire to personal property. The child reportedly lives in the area, but not at the house where all the fires were located. It's unclear exactly at this time what the motivation were and what the relationship may have been with the people inside of the residence. However, fortunately, the fire department were able to successfully extinguish the fires on the porch and in the trash can against the home before extensive damage could be caused to the residents. The boy, whose name has not been released given his age, has been taken to a juvenile detention facility. There are lots of studies out there, ladies and gentlemen, about firebugs. There's information out there about people that like to harm animals at young age. They are usually not wired correctly, and they are headed for a life of crime. Now, hopefully this 11-year-old was maybe just having a real bad day, but clearly he's got some anger management issues and he probably needs to do some cognitive therapy so that he can make some good decisions. And hopefully, you know, he's not going to spend the rest of his life in prison, but this 11-year-old is not off to a good start. My guess is when they start investigating him further, they're going to find out that this is something that has been bubbling to the surface for some time. Next on the docket, Purdue Pharma is expected to plead guilty today for charges related to the nation's opioid crisis. Now, we've talked about this in the past. The opioid crisis was a thing. It was actually promoted and manufactured by the manufacturers like Purdue Pharma to push their drugs onto doctors and then onto patients. They said that they were fine, that you were not going to become addicted to these drugs. Well, it turns out everybody knew that was false, including Purdue Pharma. And because Purdue Pharma knew that, they're pleading guilty to federal conspiracy and kickback charges and acknowledge that its aggressive marketing of opioids over the last three decades helped propel an addiction crisis that killed hundreds of thousands of people. The guilty plea is part of a settlement with the Justice Department. Now, critics say that the separate deal with members of the Sackler family, who own the company and made an estimated $10 billion from OxyContin, is a little too lenient since they will not have to admit any wrongdoing and they'll face zero charges as part of the settlement. There's clearly two sides to the issue. Yes, these people are admitting their guilt. The Sacklers are going to pay billions of dollars in settlements. And yes, they will not go to jail. Should they go to jail? Possibly. Let me know down below in the comments whether you think the Sacklers or some executives should go to prison, or is this an appropriate plea whereby the company admits guilt and pays lots of money? We do know that Purdue Pharma said that it knowingly and willfully offered payments to healthcare providers to induce them to write more prescriptions for its opioid products. Purdue Pharma is also going to admit to aiding and abetting the dispensing of opioids without a legitimate medical purpose or valid prescription and failing to provide the Drug Enforcement Administration with accurate information about OxyContin. Until it stopped marketing opioids in February of 2018, prosecutors said Purdue sought to increase sales by sending sales representatives to prescribers' offices and pharmacies to deliver company-developed messaging, giving the prescriber meals and marketing materials, and provide information about pharmacies stocking Purdue opioids. The settlement agreement quoted an executive who said in September of 2010, presentation to Purdue's sales supervisors, "As I have stated several times, we know increase in the prescriber call average will have the single largest impact of anything you can do to increase prescription of Purdue products with our core and super core prescribers." This plea deal has been given the blessing by the bankruptcy court, and the judge authorized the settlement between the Purdue Pharma and the Department of Justice. Now, obviously, Purdue Pharma has some responsibility here, but they did what they're supposed to do. They're there to increase sales of their products, to make doctors aware of it. Have you noticed, however, how little, if very few, if maybe none at all, of the doctors who are actually prescribing these opioids over and over and over again to people? And how about the pharmacies that kept filling these prescriptions over and over and over again? And when you read about some of these cases, there were situations where people were literally given hundreds and hundreds of OxyContin pills. Most doctors will tell you that after 3 days' supply of opioids, that's all you get, is 3 days' worth. After that, you're gonna get addicted to them. And I understand there's lots of people out there with pain management issues, and maybe that's the only thing that gets them through the day. I get that. But at the end of the day, some of these doctors, I think, have to take a look at what they did and accept a little bit of personal responsibility here as well. And just like anybody using a drug, yes, you can get addicted to it, but you can also say, hey, I think I'm getting addicted to it. I think I need some help. That may actually just sound easier to say than actually to do when you have something that is actually physically addicted to you, such as to opioids. I get that. I understand. But you can also ask for help as well. Needless to say, Purdue Pharma is going to be out of the opioid business for a little while longer. Next on the docket, let's take a quick recess. Please go to crimetalksearch.com and sign up for your background subscription service today. You'll be happy that you did. When you sign up for this background subscription service, you can search anonymously as many people as you want. Maybe there's somebody, a new relationship you're getting involved with, maybe a new business venture that you're getting involved with. These are the type of circumstances where you need to run a background check. Maybe there's new friends that your kids have. You want to find out what their parents are all about. Run a background check. So when you run this background check, literally millions of public records are searched over the entire United States. And while you wait and these records are searched, a report is generated, and it's going to have information regarding criminal histories, bankruptcies, property records, marital records, divorce records. It's going to be able to show you, why does this person have multiple email accounts? Why does this person have multiple phone numbers? And also, you're going to have information regarding their social media information. Why do they have multiple social media accounts that they didn't tell you about? Why do they have these phone numbers, then they only give you one phone number? Is that because they're using that to contact all their other little side actions? Those are the kinds of things you want to find out and check out. So go to crimetalksearch.com. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, the Justice Department plans to execute the first woman in nearly seven decades, just days before President-elect Joe Biden is inaugurated. And this is a controversial decision because that date had been temporarily halted after two attorneys contracted the COVID-19. Convicted killer Lisa Montgomery, who strangled a pregnant woman and cut the baby from the victim's womb with a kitchen knife, is set to be put to death on January 12th, a month after her original December 8th execution date. Federal judge had granted a request by defense attorneys last week to delay the proceedings until next year because two of them were battling serious coronavirus symptoms. They were functionally incapacitated to complete a clemency petition on Montgomery's behalf. Miss Montgomery, who's 52, will join three other federal death row inmates who were set to be executed within 10 days before Biden was inaugurated. And Biden says that he now opposes the death penalty. The former vice president has vowed to end capital punishment at the federal level and encourages the states to follow suit. Since 1973, over 160 individuals in this country have been sentenced to death and were later exonerated. Biden said in a tweet responding to the Justice Department's announcement last week that it would resume the federal executions. He stated, quote, "Because we can't ensure that we can get these cases right every time, we must eliminate the death penalty," he added, end quote. Now, Montgomery is going to be the first woman executed by the federal government since 1953, when Bonnie Heddy was executed in a gas chamber. Now, according to a recent Gallup poll, 54% of Americans consider the capital punishment to be morally acceptable. In a separate Gallup poll last year, a record high 60% of respondents said life imprisonment is better punishment than the death penalty. So, ladies and gentlemen, let me know what you think about this. Apparently, the president-elect, Joe Biden, may try to put a federal moratorium on the death penalty or perhaps even repeal it. Let me know what you think, if that's a good thing at all. Obviously, the death penalty is the law in federal court, and to repeal it, it would take Congress to pass legislation repealing the death penalty. I personally don't think that is going to happen. Now, I understand the moral debate as it relates to the death penalty. I've had a client that they were going to go death, and we were able to change their minds not to do that. And obviously, when you represent your client, you'll do whatever you have to do for your client. But you also have to remember that the death penalty is basically authorized by the United States Constitution, and the Supreme Court has said that it does not violate the Eighth Amendment for cruel and unusual punishment. In fact, there's been recent case law on a Mississippi death row inmate where the Supreme Court said that you are not entitled to a painless execution. So I don't think that the federal death penalty is going away anytime soon unless somehow both houses of Congress decide to repeal that. I simply don't see that taking place. We also have to understand there's the moral argument that we should rise above putting other people to death. But maybe there's sometimes people that are just so undeserving that do we really need to keep them around? Yes, it takes a long time to get the job done, so to speak, but that is the due process that people are given. And if we made a mistake, certainly we want to catch that mistake before somebody is in fact put to death. Let me know what you think. It's a complicated subject. Lots of good arguments on both sides. Let me know where you come down on the argument. Next on the docket, more unexplainable random acts of violence. Take a listen to this. A Florida man was arrested Sunday morning after he allegedly attacked a new neighbor and threatened her with a machete. That's right. The witnesses told the sheriff deputies that Ronald Coyle, who's 35, slammed the unnamed woman's head onto a concrete driveway, pushed his thumbs into her eyes, and punched her back several times. After the woman was able to get away and flee the neighbor's house, Coyle allegedly got a machete from his garage and came after her saying, quote, "I know you're afraid of me," end quote. Coyle has been charged with aggravated battery with intent to cause great bodily harm or disfigure, and aggravated assault against a person 65 or older. He's scheduled to appear again in court on December 14th. The woman who was attacked told the deputies that Coyle had been taking drugs the night before, and he was acting crazy when the deputies found him. They said he appeared to be disoriented, agitated, excited, and very tired. He responded to questions with unrelated answers, according to the police. The woman who said she just moved into the Marco Island neighborhood told detectives that just before the attack, Coyle spoke to her in English, she doesn't speak English, and then slammed her head onto the driveway so hard that the neighbors heard it, according to deputies. Witnesses intervened, pulling Coyle off the woman. Not surprisingly, Coyle has a lengthy criminal record, over the past 10 years, with most of his arrests on drug charges, but including criminal mischief and assaults as well. It's stuff like that, ladies and gentlemen, you don't understand. You just don't understand what would cause somebody to want to harm another individual who's done nothing wrong to them, not putting them in any fear or danger themselves, and then just attacking them brutally, and then coming after somebody with a machete. This guy needs to go to prison for a long, long time. He is a danger to the community. Next on the docket, Ricky Schroeder helps with bond, gets death threats. So we brought you this story yesterday that Kyle Rittenhouse has posted a $2 million bond. Mr. Rittenhouse has some very fine attorneys, and he's assembled a very good legal defense team. Mr. Rittenhouse has also had several people, some very famous people, contribute to the money that was being collected for his bond. So Ricky Schroeder, who's a child actor going back to the Silver Spoons days, as well as NYPD Blue, helped donate money for Kyle Rittenhouse. Well, apparently, Mr. Schroeder has had to contact the police because people have been threatening him on social media as well as at his home directly. Now, the police haven't made any arrests, but they did tell Mr. Schroeder to contact police if anything escalates. Right now, it's just words. Now, isn't this ironic? And we mentioned this briefly yesterday. Kyle Rittenhouse is given the presumption of innocence. Anyone charged with a crime is guaranteed constitutional protections, and one of those is right to bail. It doesn't say that you're only given bail if a particular side or group likes that the defendant should get bail. Was Mr. Schroeder out threatening people when there were groups paying the bonds of people that were out rioting? When Antifa was out destroying neighborhoods, looting and rummaging through businesses of people that didn't have insurance? And yet a lot of these groups came out and said, there should be no bail. We're going to have a fund. And all of Hollywood came out and donated money so that they could get the people out of jail that were rioting. Did Mr. Schroeder go and threaten those people? I don't think he did. Why can't people just be intellectually honest and let the process work? And who cares who posts the bail? There are a lot of people out there that think that there should be no bail. I do not necessarily agree with that. I think that the bail should be no greater than reasonably necessary to make sure that the community is protected, as well as making sure that the bail will assure that the defendant makes it to court, i.e. if you don't show up, it's going to be painful. Well, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? In today's world, just about everybody gets a PR bond. But it just really chaps my hide that the same people that don't think that anyone should be given a bond amount, that everyone should never have bail. There's some people who think there should be no prisons at all, regardless of what people do, that no one should ever go to jail or prison. But yet, one guy that they disagree with thinks that he should rot in jail pending a trial. Come on, people, you're better than that. Use a little intellectual honesty here and say, these are constitutional guarantees. Let the process work. At the end of the day, let's hope the prosecution and Mr. Rittenhouse get a fair trial. That's all anybody should be asking for. A fair trial, let the chips fall where they may. But I guarantee you, one side is going to be unhappy. That's the way it is in litigation. There's never anyone truly happy in litigation. It's a war of attrition, ladies and gentlemen, and the consequences are huge for a criminal defendant, unlike a civil case. It just drives me crazy that we have become so politicized on everything these days that even the law about right and wrong somehow has a political view to it. It doesn't. Justice should be blind. It should only matter. These are the facts. These are the facts applied to the law. Are they guilty? Are they not? Doesn't matter who you are, where you came from, who your daddy was, who posted your bond. Bottom line. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Our dumb criminal contestant of the day, Calvin Rassabath. He's 33. Well, he is alleged to have thrown two naked women out of his Florida home at 2 a.m. after an altercation where the gentleman, Mr. Calvin Rasslambath, declined to have a sexual threesome. One of the threesome was his wife, Ciara Rasslambath, and her friend, Angelique Pavelek. According to the affidavit, Pavelek went to Rasslambath's home to hang out and drink. And while at the apartment, Pavelek, according to the statements, said that they planned a sexual arrangement with her friend's husband. That's Calvin. Before a threesome ensued, a verbal argument began, according to Pavelek, over Calvin threatening his wife. As the dispute escalated, Calvin allegedly choked both naked women before throwing them out of the residence. When the police arrived, Calvin claimed that the women wanted to have sex with him, but he didn't want to, which is why he was prompted to attack them. Calvin explained that he was able to get them out of the residence, and then he called law enforcement. Well, guess what, Calvin? You talked to the police, and you were arrested on a felony as well as misdemeanor assault charges, and now you have to post a $5,500 bond. No one's complaining about Mr. Rasslambath posting a bond. Here we have a guy who's clearly not thinking correctly when you have two apparently willing naked women to have sex with him, and he decides to choke them and kick them out of his apartment and get arrested all in the same night. Mr. Rasslambath, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And guess what? It's a short week, and if you are selected and you're running pretty, you're in the lead, you're going to get a Crime Talk mug as our dumb criminal contestant winner of the week. Now, as we've said all along, now is the time to go and get your Crime Talk gear. Christmas is coming. You want this stuff. You want these stocking stuffer items. You want it for you. You want to be able to wake up and drink from your Crime Talk mug. You want to be able to go to sleep with your Crime Talk shirt at night. I'm telling you, hit the link below. It'll take you right to Teespring. You'll get all the Crime Talk gear you need, and you don't even have to be a dumb criminal contestant. Now, yesterday we talked about people telling us why they like the true crime genre, and we will announce the winner tonight when we go live as it relates to who gets a Crime Talk mug sent to them. We said we'd pick five winners. We'll select them tonight live on the air. Thanks for watching. We'll see you tonight, 6 p.m. Mountain Time for Crime Talk Live. Have a wonderful day.